Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host. And it is now Understanding Autism with Kimberly Isaac. And, of course, still on the line, Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas. Paul, Kim, how are you?
Good.
Doing all right, still.
All right. And, Paul, I got to say, that was a great show you just had. If people want to hear a replay, breakradioshow.com, breakradioshow.com, go to archives. And that was fantastic because I had no idea games really evoked emotions like that. And I guess what we're going to talk a little bit more about games. Is that right, Kim?
Yeah, that is right. I heard the last part of your last show, Paul, and I heard Heavy Rain, and I was like, ding, ding, ding. I was like in love with that game. He showed me that game, and I was absolutely floored at how engaging it was and how it did evoke emotion. So. Yeah, so I guess we're gonna be talking about games today on our show and identifying, you know, moments within games, you know, gameplay for parents and their children to connect and have teachable moments and things like that. So, Paul, how do you want to start?
I think I'd like to start just by introducing, you know, the idea that a lot of people on the spectrum seem to be interested in games. Not all of them, obviously, and, you know, it's always dangerous making generalizations. But games are often systems that have sort of reliable rules. You can know how to play a game, and the game is not going to suddenly, you know, change out from underneath your feet or be having a bad day and not want to play with you. That games often provide something for people on the spectrum that the real world doesn't, and give them an escape. So a lot of times parents may see that their game, their child has an interest in games and not really have the knowledge or the tools to know what to do about it. You know, do I treat it as a reward where I say, okay, you can play the game after you get your chores done? Or do I see it as, well, they're pouring a ton of their time into this. This can't be healthy. You know, how do we treat games?
And I have some thoughts on that, actually. Those are excellent points. A lot of things that I hear, and even that we're trained to do as therapists and consultants, is, you know, everybody says, okay, avoid screen time, avoid, you know, video games and TVs. And I understand the rationale is that, you know, assuming that they're going to go, you know, 12 hours and not do anything else in their lives. But I'm actually more of a fan of just promoting balance, you know. And as Paul said, I think there's a lot of comfort and stress relief in games for people on the spectrum. And for me, you know, looking at it from a relationship standpoint, you know, I think sometimes when you have that, you know, a parent receives a diagnosis for their child, all of a sudden they see their child very differently, and they forget sometimes that they are just children. And sometimes it seems like, well, all we need to do is therapy. And if we're doing anything that's not therapy, we're doing harm. And that's actually really kind of far from the truth, actually. And so the idea of play, and I know we did a show on this a while back, but play is very important because you want to make sure, keeping that healthy mindset of how you see your child, you know, how you engage them and what you choose to do with them contributes to how they perceive themselves as interactive partners. So if you treat video games or, you know, anything really that they do solo as, I'm not going to be involved at all. And, you know, people do need alone time, so, I mean, that's okay too. But they learn that, you know, maybe their role in life is just to do therapy with people and not to actually enjoy things with others. And so I think there's a lot of value in play in general. But when it comes to games, when you have a child that is quite interested, it's definitely worth it to learn about what they like. You know, and again, just being mindful of the balance, you know, if your child uses it, you know, for stress relief, maybe certain games are stress relief and certain games are more appropriate for, you know, connecting and socialization. Actually, Paul showed me a game last week. Paul, I don't know what it was called. It was the geometric shapes that were swirling and you had to find the triangle. And I almost got the equivalent of car sick looking at it, but you said it was stress relief for you in a way. So that probably would have been one that I would have.
That was a game called Super Hexagon. It's on iPhone and Android and computers. And yeah, that one, it's a very difficult game. It is very simple, but it's also one of the most difficult games I've played recently that still seems fair. And I found it as stress relief primarily because I had to focus so much on playing the game that I couldn't let my mind wander, that all the things that are normally sort of sitting in the back of my mind causing me stress weren't available to me at the time. But I wanted to go back a bit for a second and just mention that another thing to remember about games, especially you were talking about screen time and sitting them in front of a screen, is that games are an active entertainment as opposed to watching TV, which is a passive entertainment. TV is very much about sitting there and having entertainment sent to you, whereas games typically are something where you engage with the game, and they can provide challenges mentally. A lot of games require constant mental activity. They found that games, in a lot of cases, older gamers are less likely to see the onset of Alzheimer's and other sort of mental degradation. So games as an activity shouldn't be thought of as just screen time like you think of as TV, because they are sort of a different category of activity. But yeah, you were talking about...
Yeah, and that's what I'm learning too. I was surprised. I mean, for myself, I always thought that I think part of where this advice comes from, maybe from consultants and stuff, is maybe a lack of knowledge of the wide scope of games that are out there. Because I didn't know until you showed me how active they could actually be. So if people don't know that, if parents are just, you know, like for me, I remember back in the day, the Mario Brothers and Pac-Man, you did just, you know, sort of sit. There wasn't a lot of physical movement, but things are different now in the world of games.
Well, I'm also just talking about mental activity, that games challenge you mentally on a variety of levels where television typically does not. But also, yeah, as we've said, they're also something where a parent can get engaged, because if a kid is interested in games, then there's at least a chance that they're going to want to explain to you why this is their favorite game or why this is so interesting. And it sort of gives you the opportunity to open up communication channels that may not have been as open before, because you could ask them about something that's their interest. And if you learn about it, you might be able to become involved in it yourself.
Well, let me ask you this, Paul and Kim. Should parents and or caregivers play the game, learn the game, before allowing your child to get into the game? So should they know what is there that could be beneficial, make sure nothing's harmful? What's your opinion?
In my opinion,
I was going to say, in the
perfect world, I think that every parent should play games before giving them to their kids, that no parent should allow their kid to play a game that they don't know anything about. Even just an hour or two can give you a pretty good grip on it. And, you know, these are games that you're paying $50 or $60 for. It's an investment of far more than a movie, which might be, you know, $10, that you know, knowing what your child is doing, especially if he's going to spend dozens or hundreds of hours involved with it, is important. But realistically, the world isn't that simple and that easy, that it's really hard to have that kind of time. And if you're a parent who, you know, didn't grow up playing games, you won't have the skills to really experience the game to the point where you can make judgment calls on it. And what's interesting is that the games developers, all the major companies, have come together and they've created there's a body called the ESRB, the Entertainment Software Ratings Board. And they will rate games much like movies are rated. Games have mature, teen, everyone 10 and up, and just everyone ratings. And they'll even say on the box, not just the rating, but the cause for the rating. What kind of content? Does it have coarse language? Does it have violence? What in this game caused them to rate it where it did? So if you can't be involved in playing it, at least look at the ratings beforehand so that you know what to expect. And then watch how your child plays it. Watch what they're getting from the game, because you can see, you know, you might buy them a game and you think, well, this is fine. And then find out that, you know, they're using it, and they're going online and getting involved with people that you really don't feel comfortable with them getting involved with. You say, well, okay, maybe this game's okay, but we don't want you playing it online. So being aware of how they're playing the games and observing it rather than just putting them in front of the games and walking away is really important, in my opinion.
Yeah, I support that too. I think it's important to, you know, to make sure what you're presenting is age appropriate, you know, content appropriate, all of those things. And I think it's good to not only to observe and or your child, which I think is always a really great thing, just to observe and that helps with understanding sometimes. But also, another really great thing you can do in a situation like this is have them teach you. Because, again, of that idea of the roles, you know, they're always the ones who need help. They're always in therapy, and everybody else is always helping them. So to put them in a role where they can be the helper to you is really good for their confidence, and it's a really good experience to have them be teaching you and to be better at something than someone else. Because so often, you know, kids, people with autism, sometimes they feel, you know, like failures, like everything looks so easy to everybody else. I'm always the one who has things so hard. And so a venue like this really presents a confidence opportunity to be teaching, you know, a parent. Paul, what do you think about that comment?
I pretty much agree completely that typically, in many cases, you know, the person who's comfortable with the games is just naturally going to be better at them and better at new games. And so it does offer the opportunity to turn that around, to turn it into a teaching relationship where they're teaching you about this game and how you play it. And also, just in the previous show, I talked about games with emotion, with plot, with stories. And given that games these days are so much more in-depth and intricate than they tended to be in the past, that it also, you know, allows you the opportunity to have questions or have conversations with your child, like, why are you doing this or what's going on here? And it might give you the opportunity to evaluate, like, what are they picking up from this game? Are they, you know, do they understand why they're doing this, or are they just playing it because that's what you play? And sort of give you the opportunity to use the game as a sort of non-intrusive evaluation of what's going on in their head, find out, you know, why they're interested in this game, why they're interested in this story. Do they care about the characters, or are they just seeing them as game elements? And find out more about how your child's thinking in a kind of test that can't be offered any other way.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that, you know, sometimes sort of taking the edge off the face-to-face interaction or evaluation or whatever is really, really good for the person on the spectrum, you know, is just doing something side by side, or just having a parent observe where there's not that stress of performance with a person. You know, video games may be a less stressful way to interact socially, and just getting a feel by observing as a parent is a really good starting point.
Well, let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, I do have a question for both Paul and Kim. As to, are there any incredibly great games that do provide teachable moments for people, anyone on the spectrum? And this is Understanding Autism live here at the Regis Suites, BreakRadioShow.com, and we'll be right back.
Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, the second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. It's Understanding Autism, Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Kim is in studio in Phoenix, Paul Loudon in Houston, Texas. And, hey, I said that like with a Texas accent. I can't believe it.
Did you? I missed it.
Yeah, it was really good.
Try it again.
That is... I don't know. I can't say it now.
Oh, that was like French.
Oh, yeah, that was like Borac or something.
But, hey, is it just me or does everybody miss Paul in the studio?
We miss Paul.
It's just different. The whole vibe is different.
Yeah, but Paul's doing a great job describing these games.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Phenomenal. And I left everyone with a question because we are talking about games and how they could provide teachable moments to those on the spectrum. Are there any games in particular that provide really good teachable moments, and maybe even stated a different way, are there any games specifically written for people on the spectrum?
Ooh, that's a good question. That particular aspect of the question, I'm not sure about, but last week, Paul showed me some interactive games, and Paul, you're going to have to help me with the exact names, but some of the ones that we did were completely about physical movement and coordination with another person. And that was really awesome. There were times where, you know, Paul and I had to coordinate our movements, and I thought that was just a great opportunity for somebody to work together with another person in a really fun, you know, kind of non-threatening way where there's no winning and losing. It was just about collaborating and being together. And I can't remember the name of that one, so you'll have to help me with that, Paul.
It was named Kinect, and that's K-I-N-E-C-T. Adventure, and that was it comes packaged with the Kinect peripheral for the Microsoft Xbox 360. So it's only available on the Xbox 360, unfortunately. But there are a variety of games that work with it that make use of the motion sensing peripheral.
But
yeah, and
so
there are games like
oh, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I'll say there are games like that for the Wii and the PlayStation 3 that make use of their handheld motion controllers, that you move them around kind of like a wand, and it tracks where they are. But the Kinect is the only one that does full body motion. It tracks you without you having to have anything on you being held or whatever. But yeah, we played that, and we also played Kinect Party, which we've talked about previously on the show, which doesn't require anything. It's just sort of simple, you know, just something to play with. And so those are the Kinect games that we tried.
And I thought, you know, particularly those motion games, I thought were particularly valuable for children on the spectrum because, one, they emphasized play. Two, actually, spatial reasoning. You really had to be aware of your body in space to make things work and go. And so just for that concept, too, the spatial reasoning I thought was very interesting. And then for those collaborative, you can tell I'm going to bring this up again, those collaboration games we played were actually my favorite. It kind of reminded me, oh, besides Heavy Rain, but kind of reminded me of the three-legged race that someone would do is you really have to move together to make things go. And so that was just fascinating to me that was even, you know, out there as a game, but more importantly, that could really be used to work on, you know, co-regulation and collaboration, and it's in a fun, you know, way, and there's really no win or lose. It's process-oriented, and I really appreciated that about the game. So I think that was, you know, of particular interest, you know, and from my perspective, for children and their parents. So let's think, Paul, what was the other the adventure one, and then were you referring to what used to be called the Happy Action Theater? Sorry, I don't get the name.
Yeah,
right,
that was the other one we tried.
Okay. I just want to make sure that was covered in there.
Happy Action Theater. Tell us.
We
about
talked
that.
About that actually in a previous show. I thought that was a lot of fun. It was definitely kind of just so different and unique. You had things just kind of floating around you, and you had to use it. We had like balloons falling on us.
I remember. Yeah.
It was just really, it was creative. It was very playful, which again, I really like the mindset of playfulness. You know, that's kind of my area of focus as I was playing these games, because again, you know, you get caught up in therapy and a worry mindset with your kids that you lose sight of just, you know, spending time with them and enjoying things with them. And so I thought that was, had a lot of value.
So, Paul, how important, and Kim, how important is it, especially as these games are becoming more and more advanced and more specific, the teachable moments, that this is included in any type of therapy, any type of consulting, any type of providing assistance to people on the spectrum? Is it a big enhancement? Is it necessary? Is it going to be necessary in the future?
I think it's sort of, I wouldn't say necessary in terms of actual video games, but I think what is necessary is the idea of play with your child. And I think this could be part of just a balanced treatment plan where, you're going to have your therapy times and your, you know, your normal things like baths and teeth brushing and all that stuff, but making sure that you carve out some time to play. And, you know, it could be video games if that is what your child likes. And I think if you're really intentional about it, that's what's going to make it successful. You want to be sure to, you know, put some constraints on time. Again, anything in excess is not good for somebody. So you want to make sure there's a healthy, you know, boundary there. But that's just true for any of us. You know, none of us want to overdo anything to where it impedes on the quality of our life. What do you think, Paul?
I think I agree. I think that games could very much be an enhancement if you wanted them to be. You mentioned that you know, you felt that Kinect Adventures was a good one because it sort of helped improve motion skills and spatial awareness because you have to work together in a sort of three-legged race kind of sense. And games, you know, as educational tools, you know, there's a lot of games that aren't strictly educational that serve as great educational tools. That's one that's good for physical education. Minecraft can be good for collaboration and just simple problem solving. How do I get through the first night? How do I build shelter, what's going on here. There's another game that I didn't show you, and I should have showed you, and I just completely forgot about it, called Scribble Knots. And that's a game where you might be presented with a cat in a tree, and someone saying, help me get my cat out of the tree. And you can type in any word, and there are hundreds or thousands of words that work. And you'll get whatever you typed in. So you might type in ladder, and you'll get a ladder. But you might also type in helicopter and get a helicopter. Or you might type in slingshot if you want to slingshot the cat out of the tree. Or you might type in dog and put another dog in the tree to scare the cat out of it. And so it gives you the opportunity to come with all these different solutions. And there's a variety of ways. And so this is the kind of game that can be educational in problem solving and also just expanding your vocabulary, because you might want to learn more words to see what cool things you can come up with to try to stump a game. And so, you know, depending on what your educational goals are, there are a lot of games out there that aren't educational games, but can very easily be turned to an educational goal. And I think that that's one of the things that moving forward, therapists and similar are going to have to be aware of, is that, you know, some time should be spent learning about the current state of gaming and what's available to them, because they might be thinking, well, how do I reach this kid? He's got an interest in submarines, you know, what do I do? And, you know, maybe there's an interesting game about exploring the ocean floor that you can play together. It might be a collaborative game of some sort. You know, that there's all these things out there that can offer experiences that two people can share that can break down walls and offer the opportunity to start creating teachable moments, even if the game itself doesn't necessarily provide them.
Well, I like the idea that game. Now I definitely have to see this game that you didn't show me, but you said you can type in different options. So ladder, you know, type in ladder and there's a ladder, and type in dog and it could scare the cat. From a therapy, well, I'm not going to say therapy, from a learning standpoint, and something that could be valuable for development is, you know, that idea of multiple answers can be right. You know, or there's not just one right answer. I like that flexibility piece, because many people on the spectrum, they associate, you know, just one thing, some very concrete thing, to another thing, and they have a hard time branching out and thinking of multiple options. So hearing that example to me is like, wow, that's cool, because it's like, hey, let's see what happens when we do this. Oh, here's another good way. Here's another, you know, how many ways can we? And that's something that people on the spectrum really need a lot of, is that exploration and trying out of different options.
So that game, Paul, so when you, let's say, get a ladder, then the next thing is you're climbing up the ladder to get the cat, or if you get a dog, it scares the cat down. What if you typed in negotiation? Would that happen?
I don't think you can negotiate. I think that you can only summon...
Objects.
Or maybe like, you know, like how about milk, you know, or that's negotiation.
Oh, yeah.
Milk.
Oh, part of negotiation.
Milk would probably work.
Have some milk.
Yeah, milk would almost certainly work. The people who designed this game were incredibly clever. And so, you know, rather than, you know, coming up with possible solutions to every single problem that they put in the game, what they did is they went through and, like, maybe just listed, you know, fish attract cats, milk attracts cats, this. So they might have hundreds or thousands of objects where they've just checked a box somewhere that says cats are interested in this. And so any of those can be used without them having to set specific answers to the problem. And so if you realize that, then maybe, you know, somewhere else you need to knock over something, maybe knock over something on a table so that it falls down and you can reach it. And you notice a cat up there, and you can use something that attracts the cat then, or... You know, or maybe you come up with something completely different. Maybe you put a mouse in a hot air balloon, and that attracts the cat because it's attracted to the mouse, and the hot air balloon floats and can keep things in it. So they came up with this way where objects interact with each other, and so you can create really novel solutions. And part of the fun of the game is just coming up with silly solutions to problems.
Yeah, see, I think that's very valuable. And in the spirit of, you know, dynamic intelligence and flexibility and all that stuff, is that exploration, I think, is really, really cool. That would be one I would definitely have on my list.
Wow. Well, let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this great discussion. I think these are great ideas for parents, caregivers, anyone on the spectrum, and therapists, too, and consultants and
teachers.
And this, teachers, I think this is excellent. This is Understanding Autism live here at the Regis Suites. Paul Elms in Houston, Texas. Him and I are in rainy Arizona. We'll be right back.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Understanding Autism. Every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Paul is in Houston, Texas right now. Kim and I are in Phoenix. Wow, technology does work. And we're talking about games and teachable moments for those on the spectrum. And where did we leave off? We were talking about many different types of games, teachable moments, and how necessary games are. And it sounds like they may not be necessary, but they are useful.
But they can be definitely valuable. And I also just want to say, I was thinking about this during the break, I also don't want parents out there to think that video games is the only thing they can do with their child. It's just an idea of what to do with your child, especially if they're showing an interest. You know, and just engaging them on what's important to them, I think is really good. We kind of just barely a little bit touched on the educational aspect of games. And, you know, one thing that came to mind for me on that is, you know, some of the traditional teaching and learning is, you know, things like flashcards and, you know, some of the same workbooks and things like that. And those can get, you know, pretty boring. And so there are some games, you know, out there that, you know, and I've seen some like app games and stuff where, you know, kids can learn things that they would learn on flashcards, but it's more interactive. It keeps it more interesting. It holds their attention longer. You know, it's not as static as just showing a card and, you know, talking about the card, but there's actually, you know, things going on too. And, you know, things like math and grammar and just making education and learning a little bit more playful and interesting. And, Paul and I didn't actually play any of those kinds of games, but it came to mind later after we played our game. Do you have any additional thoughts on that, Paul?
Not really. I would like to say that while games can be educational, a lot of what brings people to games is that they're fun, and unfortunately a lot of educational games aren't really that fun for even when they're targeted at age appropriate, a lot of times you sort of end up with this, well, it's trying. And I think that's an area where we really need work, is that, you know, you could deliver education through games without making an educational game where it's very clearly, okay, now stop, what is 3 times 5? But if you made a game where, you know, the game presented itself as a normal game, but there were benefits. You performed better if you did know 3 times 5 because you were able to, you know, out-negotiate your enemies by working out what the best deal was before they did and getting your offer in first. Where, you know, there's a lot to be done in terms of designing better educational games, and we're not there yet. But they're a great tool for younger children. But it sort of trickles off very quickly, unfortunately.
So what you're saying is to, if some of these educational games had some type of underlying motivation, some type of reward system built in from a performance standpoint, perhaps, or playing the game better, that might make it fun.
Oh, I have no doubt that educational games could be a lot more fun than they are. I'm just... In my experience with them, typically they don't have the kind of budget and dedication behind them that the pure entertainment games have. And, you know, you were talking about, are there games for autism? And again, there's a lot of like tablet games for autism, and a lot of times they tend to just be the standard educational games again. And I think that, you know, it'd be really beneficial if there was more of as the demand grows, I think that there will be better games.
Well, I think like just maybe the idea of you're playing a game and you don't even realize you're learning, so that you're engaged in it and you're learning things you don't even necessarily know you're learning, but you are learning. And you know, I would think that there are games out there like that, Paul. You would know maybe better than I would. But
well, what you're saying is if you don't know you're learning, there's no resistance to learning.
Yeah, of course. It's just like you're happily playing and, you know, you don't even notice that you're learning.
And that's the case, is that there aren't really that many of these games yet. I mean, there are a few. There's a game, and it's not an educational game. And it's not good enough to even be one of those semi-educational games. But it's sort of a step in the right direction in that the game itself is a game about being an assassin, so it's not really age-appropriate for anyone outside of the mature group in the first place, but it takes place in historical settings, and they put a lot of research into the setting and making sure that the events of the games have a lot of historical accuracy. So while it doesn't necessarily present enough history to really be educational, a lot of things that you do pick up for it are actual facts, but unfortunately, you don't know that everything's historically accurate, which unfortunately means that you don't know which things you can trust and which things you can't. But you could design, you know, a game that is genuinely about planning the American Revolution and avoiding, you know, being caught and all the depth. You could design a lot of depth into how you pull out the revolution, and you can make sure that all of the events that happen in the game, the timeline, the dates, everything are historically accurate, and that you are just a character who's involved in these greater events and helping to make them happen. And so, you know, you could make educational games like that where, you know, especially history is a great environment for creating educational games that could also be fun. But it's really a case of, you know, requiring people have, you know, the expertise in game design, really getting together with people who have the expertise in education, and that just doesn't happen much yet. But I think that that even then, you know, using games for education still has some benefit. Like I talked about Scribblenauts. Scribblenauts can help you expand your vocabulary. Minecraft is a game that can teach you about simple circuits and computer logic in a way that doesn't seem at all like computer logic and circuits. But, you know, once you start telling someone who's into the game how to do this stuff and then explain to them that, hey, guess what you're doing? You've just designed, you know, a simple logic gate. They're like, that's a logic gate? You know, that you can teach computer science principles. You can teach all kinds of things. And a lot of games these days also feature tools for modifying the game, for adding content. So, you know, if your child has an artistic side as well, they might want to create new characters for the game or new graphics for the game or new music if they, you know, lean that way. And so games also offer the opportunity to be expressive and creative. So there are a lot of ways to work education into existing games, but for the case of actual educational games, there just aren't as many as I'd like there to be.
But let me ask you this. As you're talking about this, I'm wondering, what place do robots have as part of a game device? Is that going to – I mean, they've talked about robots for ages now, but is that something possible?
Robot?
Robot. Whatever it's called.
Robotic. One thing that games drive is the development of artificial intelligence in certain ways, because – in trying to make competitive games where you play against the computer more realistic, the designers have to come up with ways to create a computer model of how a human acts in those situations. And the key is that it's really easy to make a computer really good at any game. That typically, it's the challenge is making the computer fail in a way that a human would fail so that it's believable, so that they aren't laughably bad or dangerously good. And that might tie in with robotics in the sense that, you know, the tools we learn about actions and how to perform could go into it. You know, if you write an AI for a tennis game and you've got a robot, then you could use the lessons you've learned from the tennis game to create a tennis-playing robot. Because the mechanics of it is engineering, the mechanics of the motion and everything, and then the AI says, you need to make this motion. So there is some of that in that, and there are a lot of games that are sort of based around the idea of robotics, of designing simple systems or complex systems that interact with each other, of programming virtual robots and things like that. So there is a lot of technology and computer science interaction between games and the more serious parts of the field.
A lot of things coming up. Let's take a break, and I do have a question on our last segment. The future of games, where is it going, and what have we not seen yet? So we're going to go what I call the third level, thinking outside the box. What have we not seen yet? And the future of games. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We're live from the Regis Suites. We'll be right back.
Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.riiadvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm here with Kimberly Isaac, and on the line, Paul Loudon, stars of Understanding Autism, every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We're talking about games and teachable moments and how it might be helpful and useful and valuable to have games as part of any therapy or any type of consulting and teaching with people that are on the spectrum. And I left off with this last segment, future games. What have we not seen yet? So, Paul, let's start with you. The future of games, what is up with that, is specifically applied to autism. And second, what do you think we've not seen yet?
Well, as I talked about in the game show, we're seeing a lot of smaller, more personal games. I talked about the game Bat Dragon Cancer and how it expressed a couple's experience raising a child with terminal cancer. And I talked about how games are really evoking emotions. I can see, for example, a game that tries to share the experience of living life as someone on the autism spectrum and the challenges in communicating with the people around you. I can see games that are tailored the other way, where they attempt to show tools that both sides can use to increase communication. That games as an interactive medium, and especially as interactive fiction, offer the opportunity to tell stories in a way that allows the person experiencing the story to immerse themselves in it and make decisions that alter the story and sort of see how that experiment goes. So I'm hoping that with the future of games, what we'll get is not just educational games, but a game really show the emotional experience of what people are going through and allow people to communicate with each other in new ways.
Now, if there were games like this that you just described and about future potential games and games that actually exist now, and let's go back 20 years or so, how would this have affected you, do you think? Because you are on the spectrum. What do you think it would have done for you?
Honestly, I'm not entirely sure, just because, you know, at the time I didn't know I was on the spectrum. So I think that a lot of times it's still going to have to be in some ways a guided experience where you're going to have to know that you're on the spectrum. But you may also find, I guess, that I struggled with depression in high school. And if I had stumbled across a game about the autism experience and played it and said, hey, this really feels like me, that what this author is describing to me by way of this game mirrors my life in so many ways, that it might have sort of helped me recognize the problem that I was having earlier. So, you know, games should be seen as both a means of entertainment and a means of communication. And I think that they've been primarily entertainment in the past, but they're now moving towards communication and art. And I think that really offers the opportunity for them to help people grow personally and have these self-discoveries as they go, well, this is what this person's going through, and it mirrors so well what I'm going through that maybe I should try to learn more about this.
So games could offer comfort and maybe some type of certainty and also some type of bonding, perhaps, is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. And often with multiplayer games, with the online ones, there is very much a sense of community where, you know, these games offer shared experiences. So, you know, you play them online, so you play them with other people. And so maybe 5 or 10 other people went through the same experience with you. Plus, you may meet other people who've played the game, and you say, oh, what did you think about this challenge in the game? And they're like, oh, it was so hard. It took me 3 days of trying before I got past it. And you're like, oh, me too. It took me 4 days. And it offers people an immediate shared experience, a kind of community, much like, you know, sports offer some people a community. You know, you say, oh, did you see the game last night? This offers community, and did you do what I did? And so it can sort of really give people support structures that are maybe unusual and maybe different from what we expect, but offer a different kind of useful structure.
So it can transform perhaps communication challenges of all sorts and types, perhaps?
Oh, yeah.
I think so, yeah. Sorry, I know it's hard. I know, it's so hard when he's not here. I can't see if he's jumping in or not.
But you both agreed to that. So there, that's
yeah.
I think that's valuable from a lot of different levels. So Paul and Kim, then if it can transform communication challenges, not to just people on the spectrum, but anyone, how would that impact their self-esteem? Maybe it goes beyond just challenges of communication, but gives confidence to people. Maybe a little bit higher self-esteem type of things. Kim, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think on some level, for sure. I think, you know, it feels good, you know, for a person on the spectrum who often feels incompetent in life, to have a venue where they can actually feel competent is so important. Everybody needs, you know, to feel that way. you know, again, I wouldn't limit it to only video games in life where you help someone to feel confident, but I think it's a really great, you know, entryway, you know, into collaborating and connecting with someone. And again, just to get out of the mindset all the time of therapy and, you know, oh, my kid can't do anything, he needs to do therapy all the time. It's like, remember, you know, life is not all about, you know, work. And yes, you want to make sure your child is learning, but, you know, it's okay to open your mind to being creative and enjoying, you know, learning about things that are important to them and just playing together.
So, Paul, in the future, are we going to look at more specific games that apply to autism, do you think? And just keep everyone up to date as things come about in this area.
I think that we may highlight some in the future if they come up. Right now, I don't know of any specific games that I'd really highlight. I mean, I could probably talk for hours about Minecraft, but that's not really autism related. I think that as, you know, as things move forward and as more interesting games come out there, we may come back to the topic and talk about learnable or teachable moments within specific games or ways to use specific games in education. But for the moment, I don't see anything immediately on the horizon. But we also have a lot of new hardware coming out soon, new game systems and such, which often offers an opportunity for new creativity. So we'll see what's coming.
You know, it's just really exciting. I would think parents, the listeners right now, parents, caregivers, anyone on the spectrum, there's a lot of hope because, you know, as technology, I guess that could be a topic one day for the show too, technology, how technology can help in these areas, because technology is greater than just games. Would you agree, Paul?
Oh, absolutely. But really, you know, when I say games, I'm mostly speaking about interactive experiences in general, but because the vast, vast majority of them would be called games, that you know, that's what we call them. I mean, I'm not sure that I would call some of the things I've talked about, that Dragon Cancer or even Minecraft, games, because there's no winning or losing, there's no objective. You know, you don't really call Legos a game. They're a toy, they're something you play with. And you don't call, you know, a book a game because you're guided through that. And some of these, you just don't really have that much flexibility. Other ones, you do have more flexibility and there's no objective. But no, interactive experiences, technology is going to derive to new types of interactive experiences, and new types of interactive experiences will cause creativity that'll drive new types of technologies. So we'll be seeing a lot going forward.
Wow, that's exciting, Kim. As someone that certainly helps a specialist in RDI and autism, how does that impact you going forward?
Well, you know, I guess the first thing that comes to mind, honestly, is more of a personal component where I just didn't understand that games had so much potential. And I think, you know, a first step toward, you know, maybe considering learning about, you know, games further would be to go learn about games, you know, and just learn that they're just so much more than some of the stereotypes you hear, and just keep an open mind. And I think just exploring is a really good first step, and I'm new to this too, so I'll be, you know, learning more and more, and hopefully we can do another show and we'll have kind of a part two to all the things we're going to learn, you know, coming up in the future.
And we'll keep everyone up to date live here, Understanding Autism. And again, if you want to hear a replay, breakradioshow.com, breakradioshow.com. And Paul, any other contact information you want to give out?
As always, you can find us at facebook.com by searching for Understanding Autism Radio or visiting us at understanding-autism.info.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Kim. Any parting words?
No, just definitely we love participation on our Facebook page, and so we just love questions and show ideas and looking forward to connecting with everybody.
And Paul Alden, thank you so much, calling in from Houston, Texas. Really appreciate it. Great show today, Paul. We'll talk to you next month.
All right. See you then.
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Thank you. And this is Breakthrough Thinking, Understanding Autism, every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. Everyone have a great night. We'll be doing a remote sports broadcast tomorrow. Whiskey Rose, Westgate. See you then.